And welcome to Artifacts. I'm your host, Marissa Dickens, and today's guests are the creators of JM Film Resins, Michelle Slowey and Jesse Brunt. Thank you so much for coming on Artifacts today.
Yeah, thank you.
I discovered their work at the Melrose Trading Post. So what you guys do, you take old film and then you encase them in glass and you preserve them. I love it because growing up, my dad would we'd always watch so many films, and I love that you're paying homage to not only old films, but the art of filmmaking.
Cool. No, thank you. I'm glad that that was your initial reaction to our stuff. So that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, let's get started. So where are you two both originally from?
So we're actually both from Rochester, New York, which is ironic because we met in Florida.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, that's where we both grew up.
Rochester's a significant footnote for our company for just the mere fact that Rochester's the headquarters and the place where motion picture film is actually made. Mm. So Rochester is part of, like, they call it like the Rust Belt or the post-industrial city of America, but Rochester's in New York. New York's down in, the city, and everyone knows where the city is, Statue of Liberty, all that. When you go up, they made this Erie Canal in the 1800s, and that's where all the commerce would come into those Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. So you have three cities up on Lake Ontario. You have Syracuse, Rochester's in the middle, and you have Buffalo. And Rochester, like I said, is still the home of Kodak, and all of the motion picture film to this day is manufactured there.
I love the history behind it. I was only a film minor in college. I loved having those classes and learning how film was made and just the history and evolution of film.
Absolutely. It's still, by the way, you know, even though film is kind of a passe thing with motion pictures, obviously they still shoot on it. But I think we all know it's the majority of content that's being imaged is digital. However, film is still slowly getting more better and better all the time, even to this day, you know.
When did that switch happen to digital?
Well, you know, the thing, and, you know, I know we have a little bit of time here, but I'll try to keep these because we could go, that's a whole hour.
Yeah.
But to keep it in like 3 minutes, film is the standard for image generation all the way up till, let's say, about the 80s, late 80s, 90s, because at that point you started getting digital image coupling devices. Basically, the computers started to be able to process color and light, and it was very primitive in the beginning. Think of like Ataris and, you know, even modern television and stuff like that. It becomes a process to start use for archiving, actually, is when the first digital integration to film came. So because it just took forever to do, but you can take an old film, you can digitize it. And that was kind of like, that's what a lot of the 90s digital services for motion pictures were for. And at that point, television had branched off into its own thing. We're just talking about cinemas and the Star Wars and stuff. So, okay. So then all of a sudden, you know, people, it just gets down to like, all we need to do is just bring that scanner to the set. And what I mean by that is basically you get large sensors, you bring the scanner right to the set, you could just bypass the emulsion. And that's what we have today is, you know, when you think of the large sensor cinema that we have, that really delivers itself into the 2000s, the late 2000s. And that's kind of when it was pretty evident that there's no looking back.
Yeah. You know? So where did your passion for film originate?
Oh, man. I've been a fan of movies. You know, I ping-ponged in between houses when I was younger. You know, I lived with my grandmother for a while, I lived with mom for a while. And there was always box sets of, you know, Indiana Jones and Star Wars and just, you know, movies. So, you know, it's pretty early on. And when you're watching those types of movies at that age, you don't know it's not real. You're like, oh, these people exist. He's the hero. That person's the villain. but they do something really cool at the end, which makes them cool. So that I like them now, no matter what. And it was just, that's kind of, young. I mean, as young as you can think, 4 or 5, 5 years old watching Star Wars.
Oh,
Pretty
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, for me, my first exposure was just remembering those awesome VHS Disney box sets. Which one was your favorite, Dumbo or, I'm actually really disappointed because now that I watch Alice in Wonderland, I'm like, I don't recall having that one. Why did I not have that movie growing up? I digress. A lot of Cinderella, that's for sure. But yeah, that's where my heart lies.
What about you? What kind of movies were you watching?
Oh, see, my dad was a huge, so he was born like 70s. He always says, he's like, it's part of your education. I'm brainwashing you. Like when you have a kid, you kind of have to, right? Show them your favorite stuff. So like Star Wars, Star Trek. I love the rom-coms, like When Harry Met Sally, 16 Candles. I'm very 80s for some reason, which I
Absolutely.
love it, but all those. So then how did you two meet? You mentioned in Florida. So how did that happen?
We met on a film set.
Okay.
Yeah, I was shooting these really cool spring breaky National Lampoon-y type movies. The guy goes and doesn't know he's in a rut, meets the girl, they have a good time, they live happily ever after, and they were fun little hit it and quit it type movies. And I was in the middle of one down in Florida, and I fell in love.
The funny part is afterwards we're like all talking and I say something very Rochester and he was like, "Where are you from?" And I'm like, "Nowhere you'll know." And then that's how we found out.
Michelle, what were you doing on the film then?
Set dressing. So imagine just like having this like empty room and then you build every, you bring the bed in, you make it a real person lives there. So you're creating that character's personality through it being like a piece of trash that's left on here or like gum that's just somewhere. Like you are making the reality of this person come to life. And then him as the cameraman comes in and art and camera really worked well together. So it's just always been really fun ever since. Like the little nitpicking that we do to make something look really good.
It's called frame fucking.
I
You
love
set
it.
up a shot, and you have 10 people literally arguing if it should be like this or like this.
I love that though, the care and the like intensity that goes behind it. So like for set dressing, like is there research that goes into it or like what inspires, I guess obviously it depends on the film and what you're working on, but
Maybe this is really bad, but I always say like I love set dressing because the production designer has all the hard work to do, and then they can just tell me what they want, and then I can create their vision. So maybe I'm giving the worst answer, but there probably is a lot of hard work that goes into it, but I just get to do the really fun creation and play part. It's the best job ever when you really get to do it. Like, go to town, make this into a whole like garden, and then boom.
When
That's
you
awesome.
when I, I'm a cinematographer, so when you shoot a movie, typically there's just, and I'm sure you understand this, there's a ton of pre-production that happens. A lot of phone calls, a lot of meetings, a lot of decisions, scouting, you name it. Color palette decisions, literally everything's up for grabs and everything's talked about, all the way down to like, I like that actor, he has good skin. Well, this guy's more famous. Well, he's red, whatever the case may be. The thing about production design is there's like a macro and a micro to it. The macros, a production designer's really setting things up, working with architects, setting up buildings, designs. Why are we doing what we're doing? When you get on a set, you have to have somebody that's really dedicated to the details. They've read, they understand the characters. Well, he's an addict in the movie. In this part of the movie, he's an addict. So put the thing, put the pillow upside down. But when we get to page 54, he went to rehab. So now you got to take the pills out.
Continuity and
Whatever. Like, just that's one of infinity. That's where Michelle really thrives. She's really good with taking dissecting the set, the scene and the set, and what's in the frame, and is it moving the film forward? And that's what she's really good at.
the spectator movies, you're just like, that looks great, but there's so much work. There's so many people. So that's really cool. You guys are both in the film industry. So then how did JM Film Resins come about?
No, it's really cool. We always go down to Venice Beach and we just walk along the beach. And one day we were thinking, we were actually moving from one house here in LA to our hometown in Rochester, even though we have our apartment here and whatnot. But we were literally just like, I feel like this is always your story because you found your film and you had this idea to do it to yours. So he was like, oh, I want to resin my film that he had from his past, like, what would you say it? Like, not jobs, but like entertaining.
She's right. So it took about a year to even get completely like, okay, I think this is something like I know we've kind of been talking about it around the beach but maybe this is so, you know, we're moving and you know, when you move, you understand that, you know, everyone's moved in their life and it's a pain in the ass and there's a lot of things. And you also kind of like find stuff that you kind of left somewhere, like in a corner, upside down, in
Collect
a closet, you name it, wherever, obscure places, you got to get all that stuff out, the cobwebs, you know. I came across my old photo chem boxes from my early music videos, and you know, all the way back, even back to like my film thesis and film school and stuff. And you know, I'm like, you know, it's just kind of just the air is just destroying this stuff, you know. It's like, you know, the air is a powerful thing. Over time, it just takes everything and just weathers everything down, and film is not excluded from that. So it was very evident that I was like, if archaeologists are taking essentially highly refined petroleum products and smothering valuable fossils in them, why does it have to be limited to dinosaur teeth? Like, why can't we do this with emulsion imaging? And that's kind of where we landed on an ideology and a psychology for what we're doing. And then we just kind of evolved from there.
Where do you find all this film? I know some is probably stored in different areas and
Really cool. It comes from all over the world. We found like a print of Casablanca in Australia, our Michael Jordan we found in Seoul, Korea. So literally down to like Wichita, Kansas. We always joke because I don't know, Wichita just seems like the right place to stay because of Wizard of Oz, but it's just so ironic. Like, it's just so cool. Maybe one day we'll do a whole map of like the places that we find them and
Yeah.
just put them on there, but
Yeah, the acquiring of the film is a monumental task. We're approaching our third year of film preservation, and we have over 1,000 films in active preservation. Some are pra we are practicing on more than others, but it's that part's more of a supply and demand thing. But overall, the types of films that we get are, I guess the nice way to put it is they're no longer in projectable quality. So they have excessive fade, water damage, or they've just simply put been ran through the machines so much that they're starting to wear down, almost like a tire tread. So with that happening, you get a lot of projectionists and people who are essentially responsible for the transit of these motion pictures. They're the ones that are kind of left with these kind of like decisions. Do we just chuck it? Is it just a bunch of dead plastic after a couple hundred projections of a movie? It's scratched and hair, you name it. So a lot of them got discarded. A lot of them get destroyed simply just because it's a fast food mentality, you know, because you could always print this stuff, you know what I mean? That's the thing is, and I'm not talking about now, I'm talking about even like 15 years ago, you know, you had labs all over the world. I'd say almost 70%, if about 80% of the labs that existed in the world are no longer functioning. Are there still labs? Yes, there are still labs. But the labs and the economics of motion pictures now are, I guess the right word to say is just absurd. You know, compared to shooting on devices and stuff, we're not really having a serious conversation anymore if you're talking about that. But I don't know, that's long-winded, but you know, it's all kind of you know, it's like a tree with vines. It's like one question kind of opens up to other doors of everything.
You know, I think of too when I think about your work of like, I think it should be in a museum exhibit because it's just, it's something that It's historical preservation. Again, the whole idea of filmmaking, it begs a question of who's in charge of what. And like you said, multiple questions.
No,
So many
absolutely.
questions.
Can I just on what you're saying, because you brought up some really great things in there. So, the thing about we actually love museums. We've gone to museums all over the world, and we're going to continue to do that. The museum business model is it's obviously a successful one because they're everywhere, but they're really catered to a certain type of economic stature. Rich people. Like it's really, a place for that type of, if it's a priceless thing, what is priceless? Does priceless mean it's worth so much you can't put a number on it? Or does priceless mean it's worth so much it's actually free? It's a weird psychology to do that. So we're not necessarily trying to mess with that business model. However, when we have a 100-year-old print of a Charlie Chaplin film and it's falling apart in our hands. It's brittle like an eggshell. The only real comprehensive platform for it is the acrylic because it's just, we look at it wrong, it breaks, it's done. So we are playing in a very big sandbox. We're kind of hiding in plain sight. You know what I mean? I'm trying to, I'm not wording this right, but I bear with me. So it's like the thing about these markets that we do on the weekends, they're a great place psychologically too for people because like Melrose Trading Post is on Melrose and Fairfax. If you go, you can walk a quarter of a mile down to the Academy Museum and they have profound artifacts there and things like that. And yet, when you come to a Melrose Trading Post and in particular our booth, the Hollywood film, the JM Film Resins, you are at a museum. You're witnessing documented films and the films are original release. So if it's old, it's old.
And the coolest thing about our museum is you get to partake in it.
It's a participation of preservation.
It's like
That's
portable, it's immersive, and it's accessible.
yes.
Film is for everybody. Like everyone can watch it, so why not make it available to everyone?
And the coolest, going off what you just said, the coolest thing when people like yourself come to our booth, like you think you see a movie and then it reminds you of the person who showed you the movie or your best friend and you always say this one line in it, and it really just allows people to take the walls down. We're in a very anxious world and it allows people to have this freedom to feel nostalgic and empathetic and all these different emotions, and it's just a conduit, and like the and the film does that, and seeing it and like, okay, so this is Jimi Hendrix playing a Woodstock. Like someone sees this and you're like, holy fuck, I love this guy's music. And now I'm seeing it. And my parents told me that they went to Woodstock and they like some, it's just the stories that come out of it are just so profound and it's just so loving. And that's my favorite part about JM Film Resins, to bring this all in. That's the coolest thing.
Hollywood's kind of a bubble. You're around a certain type of personality, kind of, the ladder climbers, everyone's hustling.
Yeah.
It's Hollywood. It's a union town. I'm a union guy, whatever. When we started making these and presenting them to people, we didn't really realize some of the things that we would encounter that are kind of gnarly. Like most people have never seen theater film with their eyes. They've never actually seen it. So when people come to our booth, they actually you're just watching them heat soak essentially for a minute. And Michelle and me have gotten really good with not with letting leaving them alone a little bit and letting them kind of really hash this thing out internally. And then we usually know when to like step in and go, hey, let me know if you need any help. How you doing? Whatever. But yeah, most people have this kind of it's a reaction. It's in a good one. So that's kind of what I wasn't expecting to be so impactful, but I'm happy about it. I think the thing too is we're constantly in a rotation of what we have and what we don't. So it's not like you can come and check us out and like, oh, I get you guys. Yeah, no, you want to kind of check in with us every couple of months, if not sooner, just because, hey, I just got some new Kurosawa stuff. So, you're gonna want to see that. Whatever the case may be, blah blah blah. So that's another thing too, is it's an ongoing exhibit.
Yeah, I love that. It's like like you said earlier, Michelle, that you have memories associated with those films, and the fact that you have them encapsulated, recreating that memory is really, really special.
Right, because you probably found some films that reminded you of you and your dad watching these. So it's just like those special, that it's a feeling. That feeling just feels so warm and inviting. So you're like, oh, I want to feel this more often. It's just fun, and I'm glad that we get to do this and be. It's new faces every week, new stories, and that's the best part. Like, it brings people together. It's very joyful.
Let's dive more into the process from you have film, so what do you do with it? Because I have no idea. I'm really curious.
Well, we clean it up. We do the curation, so we do like little. We say reverse like storyboard, but it's kind of like they're very moody. Like, what mood are you in when you're curating it? And you obviously give main character and then supporting characters do this whole thing.
It doesn't make sense for me to just take one frame of a movie and just like put it in on again a piece of glass. People want kind of want the movie. So it's like this is a Beatles piece. For example, you would put all of the Beatles in there. You get nice close-ups of them. You get a wide shot, a title card, and all of a sudden you're making this mosaic. And it's kind of a representation of the story that the motion picture is versus just, oh, we just want, because there's other people doing things with film, but I think they're missing the crux of what we're trying to convey. It's not just like, oh, it's emulsion. They don't care which part of the movie they get. They just want emulsion. And Michelle and me are like, nah, people kind of want an overall thing. Every film kind of has its own personality, essentially. How it was stored before we got to it, how tightly wound or loose it is on the core, everything, you name it, how it smells, how it feels, is it damp, is it dry, whatever, we've seen everything. There's been mold growing on things. So there's a lot of cleanup. It's a janitor thing, really. The thing about what we're doing is it's truly a symbiotic relationship. It's not just the film. It's not just the resin, it's a film resin. They're coming together to make an archive piece. I actually have some film here because there's just no structural integrity to it. It's a piece of plastic. You could almost compare it to like a drum head. If you're familiar with drums and instruments, you actually you have to create just enough tension on it for it to get any integrity stitch stability. So because of that, it's kind of a hard substance to work with because it's really meant to for exactly what it was designed for. It has the reason why there's holes on the side that most people don't realize is there's these claws essentially in a film camera and a projector, and it slowly is basically doing this and it's feeding the film, but it's doing it really fast. So whenever you hear that iconic sound, even if you've never seen a film camera, if you watch a documentary, you always hear that that sound, and it's like, oh, movie. That sound is a real sound. It's from this thing in there, like a sewing machine. So what I'm getting at is to palette these is kind of like you're really limited to certain types of forms of media. The most successful form of media is acrylic. You did say glass, but glass is a slang word. It's acrylic glass, but it's an acrylic resin is what we're putting this in. So the acrylic is a liquid formed media. It takes time to cure, about 5 days. It got into the archaeology community in the 1900s, partly because of what the archaeology community was becoming out of Giza and out of the Egyptian preservations. They would literally open up these tombs and they would see these mummies, but they would also like see all this other stuff, urns and chariots and all, but then they also started uncovering these like weird looking amber boogers, and they look really close in there. And they're like, oh, I think that's an insect. It's like, oh, the Egyptians were preserving insects with resin-based materials. Was it petroleum? No, it was amber. But nonetheless, that's really why we went with the medium we went with. We're not perfectionists, we're romantics. We do our best to mitigate flaws in the acrylic castings, bubbles, hair, alignments. But at the end of the day, the real charm is in the fact that you can see the curve in the film.
I think seeing it and hearing you guys talk about it, I can tell your passion and that carries through the work. How many do you think you have right now in your wheelhouse that you're working on or?
Well, we have over 1,000 films in active preservation, but what would you say at our booth we showcase?
I feel like maybe like 300, maybe.
Yeah, about 300,
I think.
about.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you show up on a weekend and you see our outfit, it's between like 250, 300.
Where else do you guys go besides Melrose Trading Post for anyone who wants to check you out?
Artisan Fleas in Venice. We do Los Feliz Flea, which is now on Alpine Street.
Vintage Land, they're awesome. They have the best view in town. That's another thing about LA is it's really such a great place for us to be doing this. Obviously, it's Tinseltown, it's Hollywood, but also just everything with LA has the perfect conditions to have outdoor commerce, and that's really what I think makes LA's markets so much more special than just any other typical flea market.
Yeah, totally. We just did our first Rose Bowl flea, and just the history of like the Super Bowls and how many football games or concerts have been performed there. It's just so fun. Like Los Feliz used to be at John Marshall High School, which some of Grease was shot there, and some of the movies that we have in our preservation were shot there. So it's just really special. Even if we were doing this in our hometown of Rochester, it's just the step of going from Rochester to LA and then the film is made here, and it's just really profound and special. We always talk about this, like we're so grateful to be doing this here actively in LA.
Are you seeing a rise in going back to the theater and seeing it? Because I know with all the streaming services, it's a big question. There's a lot of in there, but I guess what I'm saying, is there a shift at all with
I definitely think there
better?
is a shift. Do you remember back in the day, maybe this is just me, but I loved going to the drive-in theaters. Like it was such an
Yes.
experience, like dual features back to back. You got your snacks, you're just hanging out. It's now an experience to go to the movies. You're either going with your friends, you're talking about it afterwards at dinner. It's an experience. So it's like very, it's, you know, that culture is coming back, I feel. Maybe not as much as we want it to, but I feel the nostalgic vibes of that, people want to be able to do that.
I recently just went to the rooftop cinema club and saw
Oh.
a film on a rooftop of a hotel. And it was like, again, the experience like you're talking about. So, and I feel like with, Barbie and Oppenheimer and people dressing up as, it's becoming more of a like a night out that I think is
Like, don't you just want to have been like a fly on the wall at like the Star Wars premiere and everyone's dressing up? Like, yeah, people need to have more fun. Let's just all have fun again and dress up and do cool things. Like, and now, like, at least people our age are now having kids, and it's like, and I'm sure people your age as well, and they're doing these experiences with their kids. Like, it's that's gotta be really fun. So.
Yeah, I don't know. The last movie we went and saw was Oppenheimer. We went out of our way to see it at the Chinese theater. We made sure it was a emulsion print, an IMAX print at that. It cost about $70 to do, for two people on a matinee. Wasn't
Wow.
even like a Friday night or whatever. So the economics of the box office have completely been changed. The reality is that like you brought up the rooftop projections and stuff where it's like it only costs $20 to get in and stuff, and you can go and drink and there's some food and it's a little bit more lax. People are talking, it has a drive-through mentality. These are still unfortunately very boutique psychologies when it comes to big media. So Hollywood right now celebrates these very big style films, $100 million movies, and there's a real weird psychology with that because it's like I think I forgot who said it at the Academy Awards. Someone in a speech said, "I know we're making $200 million movie. Why not make
Yes.
$20 million movies?" And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to say. So yeah, and the town will constantly change. I mean, the town will constantly go in and out of psychologies, mantras, what they consider taboo, what they don't consider taboo. And this town's always gone through these weird psychological changes with what it's really at the end of the day, it's like the new generation of adults that come and start participating in the industry. What was their background? Where did they come from? What was inhibiting them that they're trying to fix or ratify? That's really where most artists, they're like, well, when I was younger, I always wanted this, so I went and did it. So, that's what we have as an industry here. So, digital's here to stay, and the economics of the cinema are forever changed. And it started all the way in the 50s with television. I mean, to be honest, considering the three-act play that a movie is, like a two-hour movie, I'm still kind of shocked they even exist, because since the birth of television in the 50s, the big five, like all the movie studios, they were like, we're spot. Like, people are going to just turn. You mean to tell me all you have to do is hit a button and you can watch something? That really messed with everything. That's why quality got so high with movies, because they're like, the only thing we can offer is just a really high-end piece of entertainment. And television became more of a consumer soap opera-y, like just turn and burn. Now we're at this weird place where it's all kind of one. I mean, Oppenheimer was a great movie, but it's a talking head movie. It's a bunch of like, single wides and great act. I mean, obviously it's a great film, but it's not a big movie, but it is. That's just where we are with how our movies are made now.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about the psychological aspects of film and the audiences that are watching films now. So, are you thinking about any future projects?
I still shoot motion pictures, so I one of my vocations is aviation cinematography, and not just with VTOL remote controlled drones. Talking about big helicopter aviation type stuff. So I'm still participating in that form of the industry. Almost all of our focus right now is really in our film preservation. It's a passion. We have some other things going on right now with preservation outside of motion pictures that we're going to be introducing soon. But yeah, that's kind of where I'd leave that. But we'll have that out very soon. And I think it will be something that will be a great answer also for this other form of media that's been kind of like overlooked.
That's exciting. I'll keep a lookout for sure.
Yeah, please.
Well, are you ready for rapid fire questions? Because I love
Rapid fire.
Please.
Okay. What is your go-to comfort film?
Never Ending Story, hands down, best.
I'm a basic bitch, Star Wars.
Oh my God, I'm a basic bitch, but they're so good. So
Really?
my dad was obsessed. We'd go to a lot of Star Wars conventions. I
It's
just
so
get it.
cool.
Oh yeah.
Do you like Star Wars?
I do have a great appreciation for them as I've gotten older, and seeing the fandom behind it when I go to those conventions and seeing people dress up and like little kids wearing outfits and like I appreciate the culture and the community that it's created because of those films. So I do. Best place to eat in LA.
Vito's Pizza.
Yeah, we're a simple group. So Vito's Pizza is basically the best pizza in LA. Look them up, Vito's Pizza. It's good. It's good chow. It's
Do you make your own or do you get like one of their specialties?
Ooh, Garibaldi.
yeah, they have like a pesto cheese and a Garibaldi. They also have their, it's everything you would want out of a pizzeria. It's a short, stubby guy who's got way more charisma than he should ever have. He's an Italian from Brooklyn, and he just showed up and just said, I'm making the best pizza in LA, and he did. And they actually refer to Vito's Pizza in some of Entourage. If you ever watch any episodes of Entourage, when
Wow.
people's like, hey, you want to go to Vito's? They're talking about pizza.
I'm amazed too, like how many New York style, or like they've claimed to be New York style pizzas here, which I didn't expect for LA.
Claim to be
Yeah,
claim.
that says, yeah, claim. Yeah, because I've had New York style.
This is legit.
Yeah.
I try it out. It's so good.
Spielberg or Scorsese?
Damn, why you gotta do that to me? Why
I know.
the pick?
It's like
And
both.
why? Yeah.
Both because they have two different flavors. I'm like Jurassic Park or Goodfellas. Like,
So
I like both.
yes, I think that's the answer. However, Gun to my head, it's a Scorsese. And why? We obviously know that Steven Spielberg and Scorsese are doing narrative cinema. The thing about Marty is he's dabbled in documentaries, and he's very well known for that, as well as music films. He's worked with the Stones and plenty of other artists, and that's kind of a thing that when you think of a Spielberg psychology, you just don't really get to see that. You do think of music when you think of Spielberg, but you're thinking of John Williams. You're not thinking of, the Stones or things like that. So Scorsese is pretty magical when it comes to that. One last thing I'll say about Marty. I sound like I work for the guy. He
Wonderful.
also has a fair amount of his film library is substantial. He doesn't preserve them in the way we do. He does it in a more, I guess you could call it, old-fashioned way, where it's like these bunkers that are kind of climate controlled, and they stack them in almost like a library. And it's stored in our town in upstate New York in Rochester. The Eastman House stores a lot of Martin Scorsese's film preserve.
Most requested film strip.
Star
Star
Wars.
Wars. Rightly so. And I guess another question, what's the oldest that you have? Is it the Charlie Chaplin?
Chaplin.
Well, okay.
Oh, wait. That's, you're right.
Again, I'll keep this one as short as I
It's
possibly can.
the
In terms of a physical piece of media, it's going to be we have a Charlie Chaplin nitrate film called The Property Man. It's from 1914.
Okay.
Then we have a reprint of a movie called Voyage to the Moon. Voyage to the Moon is an obscure French film that was made in 1902. 1902, which is kind of gnarly. The print we have is not from 19. It was printed in the 70s. Do you vaguely, if you've seen a documentary on a film or two, it's an old black and white where there's this moon,
Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about. I was like, is that the one with
spaceships in the
the
eye.
yep.
Voyage to the Moon. We have a print of that in 16 millimeter, and that's a big deal. That's a big deal.
Wow, that's awesome. In your opinion, what is the most iconic movie quote?
It again, Sam.
From
Casablanca.
okay, cool.
I just saw that for the first time in Ann Arbor.
Does it still hold up? Like, even though first time seeing it, where you're like, oh, the I'm
Yeah,
watching a movie
I
that's
enjoyed it more than I thought, and I really do. I think it still holds up, honestly. I think, yeah,
That's
I
a weird, it's weird, interesting too, on like how they talk, and it's still like an old-fashioned, like the cadence, the delivery of lines compared to like how people talk today. It's such a different pentameter of how they would speak. And hearing Humphrey Bogart,
Yeah.
stick my neck out for nobody. This is a start of a beautiful friendship. Like, it's just so old-fashioned. It's like, come here, see, I'm talking to you, see, that kind of thing. And it's kind of interesting.
What would you say your favorite line is?
Well, my favorite line is the most iconic. Okay, so Marlon Brando's on the waterfront. He's I could have been a contender. I could have been a somebody. The boxer who's like just slightly past his prime, and he kind of realized how much time he wasted chasing nonsense. And now that he's on the other side of his prime, he's dug himself in a hole that he's. You got smart, but a little too late. Should have got smarter earlier type
Yeah.
mentality.
Ooh, I love it.
Just say yours is.
Yeah, what's yours?
Mine. Well, okay. It's like when Harry met Sally, the lady says, I'll have what she's having.
No,
Oh,
that's
I
a good
love that
one.
one. Who does that
Oh,
line?
the I'll have what she's having is Rob Reiner's mom. That's
Yes.
the mom doing that.
I love it. Yeah. For me, yeah.
Mom, I want to be able to judge
Yeah.
myself.
Oh, but she's having. What is one film you wish to preserve that you haven't found yet?
I don't know.
All of them.
We've got a great list.
All of them.
I
Oh, man.
guess I would say the ones where people come to our booth and I'm like, we're gonna have it. And then they're like, da, 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 and I'm like, oh shoot. Pen and paper. Five
Yeah.
of these. What would you say?
Horror is the German expressionism films were kind of gnarly, and a lot of them got destroyed during World War II. Nosferatu, this old weird creepy, anytime you see the dude with the hunchback, it's all from 1922, and I guess the story goes is almost all of those print, I think all of them got destroyed, but for whatever reason, I think in the 70s they found a print of it in some kind of a German bunker somewhere, and they immediately made prints for it for academic reasons. And that would be interesting to get a hold of some of that stuff. I mean, even the just to go back to that Voyage of the Moon I was talking to you about, it was a Georges Méliès film made in Paris, and in the outskirts of Paris. It did well in Europe. One print made it into America, into New York Harbor, and Thomas Edison actually pirated the film. He took his kinetoscope equipment and did a dub of the film and made a bunch of them. And he made a lot of money with that film, but which would be considered illegal today. He basically did a pirating distribution on it. While he's doing this, he's building cameras that are proprietary to his company. So if you want to shoot a movie in the United States, you have no choice but to use his stuff. And he was charging an arm and a leg for it. So a lot of double standards, a lot of gangster, a lot of scrappy, mobby things. The print that we have of Voyage to the Moon has to come from that pirated print that Thomas Edison had. So the lineage of that is kind of, there's a little bit of provenance that's what we have. So just little things like that. So you never know. You never know.
It's crazy. What is the best place to watch a film in LA?
All right. So I think what you brought up rooftops. I think that's such a great, you're going to see more of it, and it's going to be almost everywhere. The Montauban was doing it for a while. They do one at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and there's a couple other places that they do that stuff. So that's its own experience, and I think that's like probably the right answer. But if you want to talk about real theaters, Hollywood has some of the best legacy theaters: the Egyptian, the Chinese theater, and then the crown jewel, in my opinion, is the Cinerama Dome, which is still out of business as of now. I believe by next year it'll be open again, but it closed during the pandemic. But in terms of like a viewing experience, the Cinerama Dome is where you want to go watch a movie.
I can't wait to go. I want to go there so bad.
That's the cool thing about Hollywood, is it really has some of the best viewing experiences in motion pictures that you can find in the world still.
When you two are not busy preserving film and working, what do you like to do for yourself?
Nothing. No,
That's
we just
the best, though.
that's the goal, right? No, we love walking the beach.
Yeah, we're big beach people. We love, like, if you can get us barefoot with rolled up jeans and a cup of coffee, and it's kind of our, we're just like, we're past our 20s, we're in our 30s. How many airplanes can you fly on? How many, whatever. And after a while, you're just like, comfy is the way to go. So I think we're just in a comfy mood. We're starting a family, and that's just our speed right now.
I vibe. Okay, so you can follow JM Film Resins on Insta at JM Film Resins. Thank you guys so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having us. And yeah, anytime you want to swing by, just come hang out, say hi.
Yes. Thank you everyone for listening in, and stay tuned for another episode next month. Yay.
Wrapping up.